They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Small businesses and smashed windows, they are picking up the pieces in Baltimore, Maryland. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday, the 28th of April. Good as always to have you with us, everybody. It has been mostly more calm than not in Baltimore today, with police and National Guard troops on the streets. There is still an overnight curfew in effect after the protests and looting following the death of Freddie Gray in police custody 9 days ago. Hundreds of volunteers, though, were out cleaning up the damage today. Marketplace's Amy Scott is based in Baltimore. She went out to one block of West Baltimore today to have a look around for us.
I'm standing at the corner of Pennsylvania Avenue and North Fremont. In West Baltimore, there's a beauty salon, a little corner grocery store, and a liquor store, and in between them, a couple of boarded up buildings. And of course, the sound of helicopters overhead all day long. I find Sharonda Palmer arriving at her hair salon to assess the damage.
I can't even guesstimate, because with three doors practically taken off the hinges, I mean, this door is, look at all this. All this had to be replaced and put back in. And you can't patch that up.
She does have insurance. Thai and Company Beauty Salon has been on this corner for 9 years. It just had its grand reopening after around $8,000 in renovations. Palmer says when she heard rioters were headed this way yesterday, she boarded up the doors, only to have them kicked in twice. People stole hair extensions, jewelry, and office equipment.
It was like a picnic. They were just coming in cars and vans, trucks and bikes. And it was kids, it was mothers, it was aunts and uncles. It was all kind of generations out there stealing.
The grocery store in the same building was trashed. Looters took the ATM. A few doors down, Daniel Kim was helping his friends clean up Wonderland Liquors. He showed Marketplace producer Mary Wiltenberg inside.
As you can see, there's nothing left.
Wow. Wow, there's really nothing left.
Yeah.
There's like some peanuts and one, whoop, 5-hour energy.
Yeah.
Empty box of Milky Ways.
Outside, an army of volunteers walked through the streets carrying shovels and brooms. With most of the looting damage already cleaned up, they turned to the side streets and empty lots. City school teacher Quentin Lawrence lives miles away in the northeastern part of the city, but he had the day off because schools were closed. So he bought a new pair of work gloves and came out to see what he could do to help.
I think that if some of these groups that are out here today decided we're going to meet here once a month, I think that's a step in the right direction you're talking about.
Lawrence says something good that could come out of all this, the possibility of community development, something Baltimore badly needs. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
To quote my colleague David Brancaccio, awkward transition now to the markets. Net, not a whole lot going on Wall Street today, with one notable exception, which we'll get to in about, 25 seconds. We'll have the rest of the details when we do the numbers. All right, as I was saying, an interesting thing happened on the way to the closing bell this afternoon, and it cost Twitter investors a whole lot of money. Here's the way it played out on CNBC.
And if you're just joining us and you're wondering what in the world is happening, Twitter's earnings were released inadvertently early by a third party, and the stock had to be halted in trading, and then Twitter took the measure to go ahead and release their earnings essentially a half hour before they were scheduled to be reported.
Or in other words, Twitter reported disappointing numbers while the markets were still open. Not a good thing. Shares finished the day off 18%. All the hubbub you heard on that clip of tape, by the way, was a pretty high level of hubbub in this day and age of mostly quiet electronic trading. Ben Johnson is the host of Marketplace Tech. We got him on the line to help unpack this for us. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Kai.
All right, so what happened here? This is crazy.
It's kind of meta, right?
Yeah.
So the company's earnings report was supposed to come out after U.S. markets closed,
right.
But this tweet went out from this other company called Celerity. Several tweets actually went out about an hour before markets closed and said the company missed estimates on revenue and other stuff, about $20 million of revenue less than expected.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter's stock took a nosedive.
Like right in the instant, and so they stopped trading.
Celerity's website says, by the way, it uses proprietary data science to deliver real-time information for the financial service sector.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit unclear how the company got this information. People have been tweeting about it, talking about it. The company actually tweeted out a kind of response saying that it did not leak
right.
the information, but that it was pulled from Twitter's investor page. But I was looking at that page just a little while ago, and the latest report wasn't up yet. So it's kind of a mystery.
Do you think they went in and scraped it somehow? I mean, Twitter says it was not a leak. It was not a hack.
Right. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
Somehow, some of this information got scraped. They had some sort of crawling technology that pulled the information, and it was tweeted out before it was supposed to be.
This is a hazard. It's a two-pointed hazard, right? One is the hazard of electronic trading and in this day and age. But the other one is capitalism by tweet.
It's true, Kai. I mean, this is something that is popping up more and more. I mean, the whole point of Twitter putting out its numbers after markets close is to avoid volatility in the stock, right? And there have actually been examples where traders following certain Twitter accounts have managed to make these lightning moves in reaction to tweets. So there was a story earlier this month about a trader who was following a Wall Street Journal mergers and acquisitions reporter, saw a tweet from that reporter about news that Intel was in talks to maybe buy this other chip maker called Altera. And the trader used that information to make some lightning fast moves and reportedly made $2.5 million in the process.
It pays to pay attention to your Twitter feed, right?
I guess sometimes it does, Kai.
Ben Johnson, the host of Marketplace Tech. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Kai.
There's a phenomenon in education that experts in the field refer to as undermatching, when high-achieving high school students, usually turns out to be minority and low-income kids, don't apply to top colleges that they would otherwise likely get into. Part of the why of this is that these kids usually don't take AP classes, advanced placement classes that would let them get college credit, and they don't take them even though they could handle the work. Today, a group of education and business organizations, including the College Board and a nonprofit called Equal Opportunity Schools, announced a $100 million plan to get more of those kids into those classes. 10,000 more kids, in fact, over 3 years. Marketplace's Adrian Hill from Learning Curve, which is our project on education and technology, went out to a high school east of Los Angeles to see exactly how they are going to close what has become known as the participation gap.
If anyone knows the halls and classrooms of Eleanor Roosevelt High School in Eastvale, California, it's this guy.
My name is Adán Esparza. I am the head custodian at Roosevelt.
He's worked at the school for 9 years. Esparza's children know these classrooms, too. They're students at the high school. And he has big ambitions for them. Esparza was born in Mexico. He didn't graduate from college. But his kids will. He says it's not negotiable.
Got a letter for each one of them last night. They came in. Congratulations, your kid has been chosen to take AP courses at Roosevelt for next year.
APs hadn't really been on his radar.
I was actually proud to have actually two of my kids nominated for that program.
The letters are part of a broader effort by the school district to get more students in more AP courses, especially low-income and minority students that have the skills to succeed. And the fact that Esparza, who walks past AP classes every day, whose kids have solid GPAs, the fact that he needed to receive a letter from the school letting him know his kids were AP material, I'll let Jeremy Goines, the principal at Roosevelt, tell you what that means.
What it showed me is, wow, even our own families, we don't necessarily advise properly all the time. And we look past that just because our systems are in place and that's the way it's always been done.
About 3,800 students go to Roosevelt. About half of them are Hispanic. But the kids in the AP classes, they just don't look like the kids in the courtyard. There are more white and Asian students, fewer Hispanic and Black students.
Sometimes we don't have systems to catch those kids that have a lot of potential that aren't necessarily in the group of kids that typically are in those high-achieving classes.
To start catching those kids, Goines School District brought in a nonprofit called Equal Opportunity Schools, or EOS. EOS spends a year working with schools to find out why gaps exist and figure out how to close them. Reed Saris is the executive director of EOS. He says the AP participation gap, it's a national problem.
There's about 250,000 missing students per year who are low-income students, African-American students, Latino students, who could be successful in AP classes, international baccalaureate classes, the toughest classes in their school, if given that that chance.
There are a lot of reasons they don't get that chance. Parents like Esparza aren't aware of AP opportunities. Teachers don't think of some kids as AP material. And many low-income and minority kids don't see themselves as AP kids.
They may look into an AP classroom and say, that doesn't look like there's anyone who looks like me in there. I don't really belong.
Equal Opportunity Schools uses data to help change those perceptions without finger pointing.
I would say that the conversations around race and class and assumptions, that they're not as hard as you might expect when you bring data to the table, because it becomes less about assumptions and more about what the data says.
To get that data at Roosevelt, EOS surveyed all the students in the school about their hopes and ambitions, whether they feel challenged in their classes. It asked them questions about grit and perseverance. It asked their teachers which students they think could succeed. And it bundled all that information up with grades and test scores and created a profile, almost like a baseball card, with a picture and performance stats.
In our homeroom class, we received little papers with our, like, grades from previous tests.
That's Joelle Carrion. She's in 10th grade.
And on my paper specifically, it had 3 stars, which basically means, five stars, which basically meant that 5 teachers from this campus were encouraging me to take an AP class.
Junior Christian Esplana was also tapped. He's already super involved in extracurriculars. He's got good grades. He wants to go to college, but he's never taken an AP class.
It felt good, like, knowing that I am in the level where AP students are and I could do this. Not just like knowing that I've doubted myself before, but now I actually feel confident in taking these the next year.
That's EOS's goal, to build confidence, because kids who take tougher classes have a better shot at getting into college and doing well once they're there. EOS also helps schools get the word out. Roosevelt held AP presentations and AP rush days where potential students could talk to current students about the workload. It was all leading up to this moment, registration day. Dozens of kids chat away in the counseling office, looking at course lists, plotting next year. David Sanchez is one of the school counselors, attempting to control the chaos.
I think that because of them, their awareness, the conversation that we're having with them is much more, you know, I've heard of this AP class, I want to try it, I want to push for it. So we are pushing it a lot more now.
I'm taking AP Gov, AP Psych, and AP Lit, Language Arts.
That's Junior Christian Esplana. All told, students at Roosevelt signed up for 700 new spots in AP classes, a 15% increase in the number of Hispanic and Black students registered for APs, including the daughter of Adana Esparza, the head custodian. Now it's up to the school to make room for all these budding scholars and help them succeed. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Equal Opportunity Schools, we should tell you, is funded in part by the Gates Foundation, which also funds, in part, education coverage here at Marketplace. We put together a thing on our website where you can find the AP class participation rate by race at public high schools all over the country. You can check it out at marketplace.org. Coming up.
Teams pay around $10 million a year in dues to the league office, and that money is tax deductible as a business expense.
Football and taxes, but first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is up 0.4% today, 72 points, closed at 18,110. The Nasdaq gained 0.25%, that's 5 points, 21.14. The Nasdaq, however, gave back 0.8%, it's 4 points. Finished at 5,055. Financial shares took the up elevator. JPMorgan Chase gained 0.2%. Goldman Sachs added about 0.5%. We told you about Twitter's very bad, no good, horrible day, so I'll move on to other tech news. Yesterday's juicy earnings aside, Apple off 1.5%. Today seems investors were repositioning, as the experts like to say, their portfolios. Google off 0.3%. Microsoft, though, clicked up nearly 2.5%. Also on the earnings front, Wynn Resorts up more than 1% before the bell. Then came a disappointing quarterly report and shares off more than 8% after the close. And also, get this, GoPro was up 4% before the trading day ended. Then it reported earnings, strong earnings, but shares dropped in after-hours trading. GoPro figure. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.00%, or 2% is another way to say that. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. In Washington, the Commerce Department issues its initial estimate for first quarter gross domestic product. The National Association of Realtors releases its monthly pending home sales index for March. And the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee holds a hearing titled Flying Under the Radar, Securing Washington, D.C. Airspace. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tyson Foods said today it's going to dial back the use of antibiotics in its chickens. One of the company's biggest customers, that would be McDonald's, announced last month that it's going to stop buying chicken raised with antibiotics. So That explains that. Another big chicken processor, Purdue, has promised to do pretty much the same thing. As doctors will tell you, this matters because the more antibiotics that get handed out to any species, the faster you get antibiotic-resistant superbugs that kill this species, that'd be people. Next, Tyson says it wants to cut back on the antibiotics that are used on pigs and cattle, which Marketplace's Dan Weissman explains might be tougher to do.
Getting hog and cattle farmers to go completely antibiotic-free isn't necessarily Jonathan Kaplan's goal. He's director of the Food and Agriculture Program at the Natural Resources Defense Council.
It turns out that we can get the same or nearly the same public health benefits by reducing the routine use of antibiotics.
But he says some exceptions make sense, like treating animals that actually get sick, or giving low doses to piglets when they're weaning. Turns out that's helpful. And it turns out that's all Ron Prestige says he does on his hog farms. He's a hog and turkey farmer producing more than 500 million pounds of pork a year and president of the National Pork Producers Council.
Trust me, I wouldn't want my child or wife to have an illness that we did not have an appropriate drug to treat, or myself either for that matter.
It's not clear whether those practices represent the pork industry. What is clear? Reducing the use of antibiotics in cattle is a heavier lift. They are not built to digest grain, which is what they get to eat in feedlots. So they get liver abscesses and need antibiotics. Steve Roach is the Food Safety Program Director at the Food Animal Concern Trust.
We've created these systems based on the ready availability of antibiotics. So trying to rejigger the system and find better diets of cattle is a challenge.
But lowering the antibiotic load in bacon, that could be more doable. In Chicago, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
If you have an interest in business or politics, or business and politics, you'll have heard of Koch Industries, the conglomerate controlled by the Koch brothers, Charles and David, brothers who have a reputation for spending big money on conservative causes. They've now come out in support of a decidedly progressive cause, though, a movement called Ban the Box. That's a push to get rid of the checkbox that's on a lot of job applications that asks whether you've ever been convicted of a crime. Marketplace's Tim Fitzsimmons has that story.
The Koch brothers have a surprising soft spot for the kind of criminal justice reform often championed by the left.
They've been front and center, really out there on reform issues, looking at mass incarceration, issues of police militarization, and related topics.
That's Nancy Lavine, director of the Justice Policy Center at the Urban Institute. She points to an article Charles Koch wrote in January calling for an end to what he called the criminalization of America. Michelle Natividad Rodriguez is with the National Employment Law Project. She says criminal justice reform may seem like a progressive issue, but it makes hard business sense for companies to back it.
Business absolutely wants to see that people can take care of themselves, can give back to the economy, can support their families. That's what keeps our economy going.
Rodriguez says that banning the box would help about 70 million Americans find jobs. That's a lot of potential employees. She says the movement has caught on with cities and states.
We've seen fewer corporations take this on, and what we want to see is more of that happening.
Roger Clegg is president of the Center for Equal Opportunity. It's a conservative civil rights think tank. He says it's possible that companies like Koch Industries might be doing this because they could be missing out on good potential employees, but then again, it could be about something else.
A lot of companies might think that this is good publicity, and I think that particularly larger, you know, national companies are always eager to appear to be politically correct.
Groups supported by the Koch brothers are expected to spend up to $1 billion in the next elections. Maybe some of that money will go to advancing this cause. In Washington, I'm Tim Fitzsimmons for Marketplace.
There's news of football today. More precisely, there is news of football and the Internal Revenue Code. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell announced this afternoon that the National Football League is going to give up its tax-exempt status. Much like the tax code, though, there are a whole lot of caveats to this story, so we've called Kavitha Davidson. She is a sports columnist at Bloomberg View. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Why do you suppose the commissioner is doing this now?
So that's the big question, isn't it? Especially at this time, yeah. There's a lot of news obviously going on today, and it just kind of seems a little bit like a news dump, wow. Which is weird because you would think the NFL giving up its tax-exempt status is a good thing, can actually make the NFL look good. Yeah. It will save taxpayers, you know, by generating an income from taxes of $109 million over 10 years, which actually isn't a lot of money to the NFL,
right?
But it's a lot of money to us.
And we should say, you know, the teams and the television contract and all that stuff, I mean, that's all taxable income. What we're talking about here is the league office.
Right. At the same time, there are some iffy numbers on how much that actually means. The NFL always likes to say, you know, the league office itself doesn't make any money. The league office itself may even lose money. That's not entirely true. Money is fungible.
Yes.
So, you know, especially when it comes to team dues, teams pay around $10 million a year in dues to the league office, and that money is tax deductible as a business expense because the league office is categorized as a business league, as a 501c6 nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. That basically means that the NFL can take that money, and if it doesn't spend it in a certain amount of time, can loan it back as part of its stadium financing program, for example, in very favorable terms. It is a little bit more iffy. It's not quite as clear cut whether or not the NFL's league tax exemption actually does or doesn't benefit the teams themselves.
The league changing its tax exempt status, though, means that it does get out from under some disclosure requirements, too, though, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Executive pay is the number one disclosure requirement that I would guess is motivating this decision. You know, in 2007, when the tax code was amended so that a 501c6 would have to make these disclosures, Major League Baseball immediately relinquished its tax-exempt status.
Huh.
You know, not incidentally, that was the only year that we really had information on Commissioner Bud Selig's salary and everything. A lot is made, especially in the last year, with the missteps that Roger Goodell has made in the NFL, that, you know, he made $44 million in 2012. And the amount of money that he's making is just expected to continue to rise after his current contract expires. And now we won't actually have any of that information to confirm what he actually is compensated with.
Day to day, though, does this change the National Football League?
Not even in the slightest. You know, I think that there are a couple of public relations things that this can actually help ease over. One, obviously, there's a lot of criticism that the NFL is a nonprofit, and now we can't say that anymore. Executive pay is a huge thing because, frankly, the NFL continues to grow and does not continue to reward its players with increasing salaries at the level that it's increasing its executive salaries. And the third thing is that I don't think enough people will be talking about is, as the rest of the country fights for equal pay and the NFL has started to actually promote women to higher level executive positions, we won't have disclosures now to confirm that they're being paid in a comparable way to their male counterparts.
Kavitha Davidson is a sports columnist at Bloomberg View. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
This final note on the way out today, which comes with the observation that capacity at Camden Yards, the Baltimore Orioles baseball stadium, is 45,971. All those seats are going to be empty tomorrow. The Orioles announced this afternoon that Wednesday's game against the White Sox will indeed be played, but it will be closed to the public, which raises a whole bunch of questions. What happens to all the foul balls, do you suppose? Are they still going to have the organist play? It's going to be really echoey in there. And more seriously, what about all the people who work there on game days, the ushers and security people and concessionaires? They still going to get paid? All right, we are out of here. The Dow up 0.4% today, 72 points. The Nasdaq gave back 0.1%. The S&P 500 was the winner, gained 0.25%. That is 5 points. All of that pretty much before all that Twitter hubbub. It was interesting. Got to tell you that. Caitlin Ash, Millie Jefferson, and Vanessa Smith are the producers on our Marketplace desks. Our digital producers are Raghu Madhavan and Tony Wagner. The senior digital producer is Nishant Kurwa. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you all tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.